Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hidden Histories. So this is the first part of a new and exciting feature I have been working on for the podcast. I am launching the Castle series as part of Hidden Histories. I'm going to explore the fascinating history of some of our best loved, as well as our lesser known castles. If you love history, you love castles, but they're not always that easy to get to. The Castle series will bring the castle to you. So I'm going to talk to a resident expert about the castle, those who lived and worked inside it, and what these extraordinary buildings were all about. For the first episode of the Castle series on Hidden Histories, I'm going to Leicester with De Montfort historian Tom Weir. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Tom, welcome to Hidden Histories. You're a historian at De Montfort University, and we're here in Leicester to talk about Leicester Castle in part one of Hidden Histories Castle series.
Yes. So our castle originally, there's actually almost sort of two sites for the castle. The first one is our old motte, which used to have a bailey castle on the top. That's originally built in 1068, just after the Norman Conquest. To sort of help pacify Leicester and the surrounding area. Unfortunately, there isn't a castle on the top of the motte anymore, although the motte is still there. But the top of that got levelled off during the Victorian era to provide for a nice place for the gentry to play bowls and croquet. And it didn't last particularly long because they realised when their bowls fell off the hill that it was a bit of a downhill and uphill to go and retrieve them. But what we do still have is we've got the old medieval hall, which has actually now been taken over by our Leicester Castle Business School here at De Montfort. So we've restored sort of the insides, and we still have the old ceiling dating back to the 14th century expansion. And it's this castle that doesn't look much like a castle from the outside, but is what we now call Leicester Castle. And you can come in and visit.
For those who aren't super familiar with what a motte and bailey castle is, can you just explain what the layout of that would be?
Yes, so these were castles built particularly by the Normans post-conquest. And the motte is a mound that would be built, so they would gather in, they'd sort of scrape up earth or rocks, but it was particularly sort of earth, and want to build a sort of high-sided mound, essentially, for protection, and also to get be able to gain height to be able to look around the surrounding area. And then the bailey was a keep or a building, a sort of fortified building that was put at the top. And this was, you know, very, very traditional kind of castle style, almost sort of castle type one, that you would have, very useful for defence, not particularly big, but very quick to put up. Some of the baileys would be wooden, some of the baileys would be stone if they were a bit more substantial. But they were particularly put up in very much in a hurry by the Normans as an effort for them to be able to kind of help really kind of impose themselves on the surrounding areas and show who's in charge following the Battle of Hastings.
Yeah, the Normans took that pretty seriously, didn't they?
They did, yes.
And you know, what's contrary to popular perception is that actually the bailey wasn't necessarily where the lord or the monarch actually really lived, was it? It was more of a defensive outpost.
That's entirely right. The lord would very often live at the foot of the bailey. They would have their great hall, simply because there wasn't an enormous amount of space at the top. Baileys were not grand castles as we imagine them. They were put up in a hurry. They were defensive. Very it's more accurate to think of them as watchtowers, really, than to think of them as castles. You certainly wouldn't have sort of turrets and people manning the barricades of a Bailey castle. They were a point of last retreat, almost. But they're very much there as a symbol, and they're very much there as essentially a sort of glorified watchtower, rather than as the place that the Lord would live.
Awesome. Okay, so the outhouses were really the main part of the castle complex, and that actually is what does really survive today and what you can go and see and as part of the university.
It is. It's not, well, unfortunately from the outside, it's not in its kind of traditional form. If you come to it, it will look an awful lot like a sort of Victorian university building. That's because it is. It was actually converted over to being a Victorian courthouse. So if you go inside, what was once one big, long, grand hall is now two separate Victorian court buildings. But it does survive. The original timbers survive. The original dimensions survive. And whilst the university has yet to take up my offer of hosting a grand medieval feast, I don't know why, but they haven't. But they do still have kind of the ability to go inside, to be able to see the timbers, to be able to see the dimensions. There's the hearth at one end as well.
And the timbers are amazingly preserved, aren't they? It's incredible. You look up and they actually are, look, they look immaculate. They look almost brand new.
To the best of my knowledge, they're the original timbers. They really do. They were built to last, and they've been looked after. There was a small period in the 1970s, 1980s, following when they weren't used as a courthouse, where the building started to fall into decay. The university sort of rode to the rescue of that and restored it. Nice plug for my uni there. But they are amazingly well preserved, and I would hazard that they're still going to be there in another 400 or 500 years if they're looked after and cherished, like they would have been during the time that they were being used as the Great Hall for the Earls of Leicester and for the seat of power that was held here at Leicester.
And then later, Richard III, we're going to talk about that.
We are. You can't escape Richard in Leicester.
Definitely can't.
He spent years and years living peacefully under a car park. And, the other uni go and dig him up. University of Leicester, great work digging him up, by the way. Not me slighting at them, but fantastic museum now to him. He's very much our sort of celebrated king that was here in Leicester. He, I believe, held various sort of courts here in Leicester, but we can talk about that.
Yeah, so before we move on to Richard III, I want to talk about one of my favourite men.
Yeah.
One of them. Henry, Duke of Lancaster, who actually really was the one who created Leicester as the powerhouse that it has endured to be. So he created the Leicester to be, or his father had a role in this as well, as creating Leicester as the centre of the Duchy of Lancaster, which became this huge, huge thing. It was second only to the crown in the amount of lands that it controlled, the amount of wealth that it had. So Leicester was a really important place in the Middle Ages, wasn't it?
It was, and it owes that to a few kind of different quirks. Obviously, they're having a navigable river, having had some Roman settlement here, as kind of indicated by the name Leicester, the fact that it's pretty much slap bang in the middle of the country, and it would be between the sort of ancestral home of Lancaster and London, and so it was very geographically important, but it became kind of increasingly important as a city. And one of the initiatives that Henry did was to build the area actually that we're sitting in at the moment, which is the Newark, which was the new work, sort of if you push them together, it's Newark, and that contained a church, that contained a hospital, and it was an extra sort of walled area outside of the city walls, and is now where De Montfort University sits. So we sort of inherited the Newark. But there's still a number of really sort of fantastic pieces of architectural history that survive here, like our gatehouse that kind of welcomes everyone onto campus, welcomes sinisterly sort of whatever way. But it became this real sort of strong trading area as well, Leicester, because it's got all this sort of fantastic countryside and farming land around it. So this was the real hub for sort of traders to come in, and with it being on a very sort of geographically important and made so even more by Henry, it really kind of grew in stature during the 14th century.
Yeah, it was, and so important to him as well that he was actually interred at the Newark, the church that he founded. Okay, so then it was inherited by his son-in-law, John of Gaunt, my favourite man. And he also did some extensive building work. So he really pumped some of that money back into Leicester. He kept it as the seat of Lancastrian administration. And we actually went and had a look at a really interesting part of the sort of hidden history of Leicester, which is his cellar, which was absolutely fantastic for me to go down and see. And there's some amazing little bits of graffiti down there, and it's this old sort of medieval dungeon that they thought in the Victorian period, but actually it's this cellar, which was probably a wine cellar.
Yeah. And the exact origins of it are probably bound up with Henry. So it gets nicknamed John of Gaunt's cellar. It's probably him that used it best, but it is probably Henry that actually built it. It is fantastic because it sits there kind of underneath the castle, so you can get permission to go and visit. You have to ask nicely, but it sits there kind of underneath the castle and would have sort of linked on and does link into the castle gardens, but was used at different points. So it would have been used for storing food, for storing wine, for storing anything that needed to be sort of chilled. It wasn't a dungeon, but what made people think that is because during the Civil War and then later during the Napoleonic Wars, it was used to house prisoners. Mm. So that's where some of that
fantastic graffiti comes from, which I will put on Instagram for anybody who wants to go and have a look at that.
But fantastically carved out, you know, almost sort of calligraphy on the wall. So they were obviously there for quite a long time, some of these prisoners. But you can make out dates like sort of 1798 and on the wall. So it is this, you know, fantastic cellar that just lies hidden, and the only hint to it really from the outside is a bricked up door. So there's this bricked up door and a panel on the outside telling you all about John of Gaunt's cellar, but you can't go in unless you ask nicely. But yeah, it's this fantastic piece of hidden history, and similar as well, there's another sort of cellar that's part of the castle complex, which got converted into the holding cells for the courthouse, and that's a little bit better restored, and that you're able to go down and see again this kind of medieval cellar that's become used again by the Victorians to turn into police cells, and you know, now we've got that as part of the university buildings, although we're not using the police cells for, we'll say, semi.
Apart from Freshers Week.
Well, we can't actually officially confirm that's something we do. It's been muted. No, for purpose. We've never used it during Freshers Week. It's not. But they're these absolutely fantastic kind of spaces that's there. The courthouses are used quite a lot by for visiting speakers and for talks by people in the faculty and things like that.
So let's go on to the man that everybody is itching to hear about, the ever enduringly popular Richard III.
Yes, Mr. Hunchback himself.
So tell me, let's kind of take a step back a few years as to what happened. Why was there this big fight over the remains of Richard III? How was he found and how did he come to Leicester?
So he came to Leicester because the Bosworth Field, which I know there's a bit of dispute over where exactly it is, but was quite close to Leicester. It's believed to be just outside of Market Bosworth, which is a fantastic sort of beautiful area, and they've got a lovely sort of set up for the battlefield site. But Leicester was the closest city. He had, I believe, overnighted in Leicester before going to the battle. So when sort of Henry was victorious at the Battle of Bosworth, this was the nearest big city to come back to, to sort of pronounce that he was successful and then to display Richard's body. Richard was, you obviously need to bring him back intact to display that he's dead. Supposedly he had been brought back having had a pike shoved rather ignominiously, sort of up his derriere, up his bottom. And it sort of went up, and he's obviously dead first at least, but he was kind of brought back to Leicester, displayed, and then handed over to the monks of Greyfriars, which was one of the abbeys sort of on the outskirts of Leicester, who were in charge of ensuring that he had a burial. But because he's the opposing king, they don't want to bury him, or it wasn't encouraged by the new Tudor regime to bury him with sort of all honours. So he was kind of quietly buried, and it was slightly recorded, but there wasn't an enormous amount of sort of fanfare for burying this former king. Greyfriars got abolished under the reforms of Henry VII's son, Henry VIII, and the resting place of Richard kind of got lost in time, and then it gets picked up again due to some absolutely fantastic work by the University of Leicester. You know, bigging up our rival, but we're above pettiness when actually they've done this amazing kind of work to you know, go through sort of archival records, find that he was supposedly buried, find where this abbey was, and then work out, right, what can we dig up? Because there's quite a lot of buildings down there. It's near our cathedral. It's also near our legal quarter. Telling lawyers you need to move them out of buildings to dig stuff
this
up.
This is also, to just say, this is an amazing example of when historical research and archaeology come together, and using both to discover probably, I would say, one of the most important finds of our century.
It was a huge find. It's been immensely important for Leicester to help put us on the map, but also in terms of answering some of the myths that have built up. So I mentioned him being sort of hunchbacked earlier, which actually is this myth that comes through Shakespeare. And when they found this skeleton, so they found this skeleton in this car park, and they were able to DNA test it. They found one of his surviving sort of male relatives, I think living in Canada, DNA tested him and matched it to Richard. And this skeleton, once they pieced him together, realised it's Richard, they were able to work out that far from being hunchbacked, he did have a physical deformity, but it was scoliosis, so it was sway back, which would have had him in quite a lot of pain a lot of the time, but you know, he wasn't this sort of evil hunchback of Shakespearean legend, but there was an element of that physical deformity around him. What they then did, so they've managed to find him, and there's a brilliant museum now on the site where they've found him. It's quite small, but I highly recommend it. And he then got sort of reburied in Leicester Cathedral with sort of full kingly honours. There was a little bit of an argument over whether he should stay in Leicester or go to York. I was split, having done my undergraduate at York and now living in Leicester, but I think it's right, given the work that was put in, and given that he ultimately fell. A battle just outside Leicester has been lying sort of in state, not in state in Leicester, that he should be given the honours of lying in state in Leicester. And he's celebrated at our cathedral and with a statue outside. And
what was his, when he was alive, he used the castle, didn't he?
He did, because he was travelling an awful lot around his kingdom. He was only in power it's around 3 years, I think. But he's still sort of in the midst of a civil war. And so he was needing to travel, needing to show face, needing to be available and where the king was, the government was, or the parliament was as well. And so, you know, Leicester, the Great Hall, was used as our parliament whenever kings were in residence and Richard was in residence at times. So it has a real kind of history and majesty to it, and he would have been sat in that great hall under those timbers, you know, holding court and holding forth. But certainly before the Battle of Bosworth, he was there sort of almost having his final meal.
That's amazing. And it's amazing that you can actually go and experience that yourself and sit in that courtroom, which was that medieval great hall, and beneath the same roof as Richard III. and some of the great lords and even kings and princes before him. Okay, so after Richard III, you have mentioned the Napoleonic War and the Civil War.
Yeah.
What else is there to see? What else is there that is a hidden history of Leicester from those periods?
Well, certainly starting the Civil War, if you go to the gardens of Newark House Museum, they have some of the old original wall. It's about the back in, you know, actually very beautiful, very quiet gardens. And you can still go and see the shrapnel damage that was caused by the cannons during the Civil War. Sort of on the wall there, because this was a very sort of a fought over city, Leicester. And then in terms of the Napoleonic Wars as well, this obviously wasn't on the front line, but this was somewhere that French soldiers and French officers were sent to be interred. And just as there is graffiti down in John of Gaunt's cellar, also in our castle in the Newark, in the gateway, in the Newark gateway, there are rooms in there that were used to inter prisoners, and you can go and see graffiti and other sort of bits dating back to Civil War internment and to Napoleonic War internment as well.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much, Tom. And actually, what's so amazing is there is so much hidden history just in, with all within walking distance of your campus, and you're so lucky to be able to, just work within it, work amongst all of that.
I probably forgot to mention St. Mary de Castro Church, directly opposite the castle. And so that's a church that, again, dates back to the 14th century. Henry IV was knighted there. It's where Chaucer, quite a famous writer, he got married here.
Yeah, well, he was within John of Gaunt's retinue, so it's quite likely that he was actually married under the patronage, and he was married to Philippa Chaucer.
Yeah,
who was the sister of John of Gaunt's third wife, Catherine Swinford.
So you can still go and see that church, and it does retain some of its original features.
It's predominantly medieval, but then there are these layers of history from the Napoleonic Wars, Civil War, all the way through time up until now. And it's amazing how it's been preserved. And the Victorians, they did a pretty good job.
They did. They actually were a
apart
lot better
the bowling green.
Apart from the Bowling Green, but that's, that provides amusement, if nothing else. I suppose it's what it was intended for, wasn't it? But perhaps not in the way they intended. It's chock full of history here. It's absolutely fantastic, and, right up to our most recent history, obviously, of winning the Premiership in 2016, which we're still rather proud of and we'll probably never shut up about in Leicester. But just in our little area around our campus, there is so much history kind of that is still sort of enmeshed in the structure and in the environment.
So it's really worth coming up to Leicester and just taking a look.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
Come up, use it as part of a day trip, maybe go out to the Bosworth Battlefield as well. But you'll have a great time. You'll see a lot of history in a very, very small space of time.
Tom, you on Twitter?
I am indeed. It's at T.Weir8.
Spoken by a man who uses Twitter all the time.
Yes, exactly. Last tweet back in XYZ. I'm also, I've got my website, tomweirhistorian.co.uk and .com. So if you want to know a bit more about some of the stuff I do, particularly my speciality is sports history.
Which you are coming back on the podcast to talk about another time.
I am indeed, yes.
So look forward to that one, everybody. Thank you so much, Tom.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.